Hi, I'm Kristen Bell. And if you know my husband, Dax, then you also know he loves shopping for a car. Selling a car? Not so much.
We're really doing this, huh?
Thankfully, Carvana makes it easy. Answer a few questions, put in your VIN or license, and done. We sold ours in minutes this morning, and they'll come pick it up and pay us this afternoon.
Bye-bye, Truckee.
Of course, we kept the favorite.
Hello, other Truckee.
Sell your car with Carvana today. Terms and conditions apply.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
It's Power Hour, LSU.
Let's freaking go. Are you kidding me? We are one day closer. One day closer to the best day of all time. Opening day in college football. I don't care about this week zero mess. You can leave that all the way in Ireland. I'm all about LSU versus Clemson. And one simple offensive fix that I feel will take this LSU offense to the next level. And there's extra context that needs to be included with what we are about to say. Okay. So there is something in football called trips, right? It's a very simple concept where you have three receivers to one side of the formation. That's all it is. And basically, anecdotally over the offseason, when rewatching every single game over and over and over again, I noticed that LSU offensively was better when they were in trips formations, right? When the field was spread out and or overloaded to one side of the line of scrimmage. Now, why does trips matter so much and why do a lot of teams like to run it? Well, it's simple. In trips, you are overloading the defensive coverage with three very potent wide receivers. And oftentimes in trips, the best thing for you to do is throw away from it. And the best offenses are really good at running 3-by-1 formations. That's another way of describing trips. Now, today, I actually went through and extrapolated as many trips games as I possibly could. And I chose 4. We're going to do Alabama and have it for the live stream tomorrow. I had started looking at quad formations, but the data was just not as extensive on that for LSU because quad data is very small sample size. You don't really run that enough. So I said earlier today, F it, let me just look at how the LSU offense operated last year when they were in trips, okay? And I picked 4 games in particular. Now, before I share this information, versus UCLA, when they just ran 2 receivers to one side and 2 receivers to the other side, they were really good in that formation. And obviously, there are a gazillion formations that every offense runs every game, or 90% of offenses run a gazillion. So let me show you the yard per play numbers, how different they were when LSU ran trips compared to when they didn't. And let's actually start with South Carolina. So this was a game played earlier in the season. And as you could see, their yard per play numbers were better against South Carolina when they were in trips. They ran 18 plays when they had three receivers. And I didn't include tight ends attached to the line of scrimmage to this. This was simply, and it didn't need to be wide receivers. It could be Mason Taylor spread out. It could be a guy like Kamarion Penton spread out, who obviously is no longer with the team. But you see here, versus South Carolina, when they were in trips, they were really good. 135 yards, 18 plays, and a 7.5 yard per play clip. On other plays, 282 yards, 54 plays at a 5.2 yard per play clip. So when LSU simply put three receivers to one side of the formation, they were a full 2.5 yard per play better. Now, before we get to these other games, let's welcome in some of our viewers. Starting off with JT. We all agree on one thing. Go Tigers. College football is back. Maybe a Clemson fan. JT, thank you for all your support. I miss doing Clemson radio. I did used to do radio in South Carolina. Okay, so welcome. Hope to see you in the pregame, halftime, and postgame stream. Quick scheduling announcement. We are going to have to go live tomorrow afternoon. 3:30 is the time I'm looking for. And tomorrow morning, you will have a new LSU film study that will hit your inbox. And by your inbox, it'll just hit the YouTube algorithm. So make sure you check it out. And it is our breakdown of throwing to the running backs out of the backfield. Could that be a weakness for this Clemson defense? We also had a Blanche, 904 Drew, Marcus, Jamie, and my lovely wife, Haley. Good to see you. She's been trying to text me. And here's the thing. You don't text me during college football season. Okay, I am a single man during college football season. I'm kidding. I'm not a single man. I couldn't live without my wifey. But the truth is, well, you know how it goes. And for some of our ladies at PHL, Julie just dropped a super chat. You don't want to mess with Julie during football season. She is one of the most diehard viewers we have ever seen. Okay, now we continue with our trips deep dive today. Now, once again, the UCLA game, LSU was more potent in 2x2 formations than they were in trips. Okay, I don't want to do that one just yet. I want to go to Florida, okay, where they ran a whopping 92 plays. Overall, LSU averaged 4.5 yards per play versus Florida. Look at this differentiation. Once again, a nearly 2 yard per play difference. On trips, 155 yards on 30 plays at a 5.16 yard per play clip. 235 yards on 62 plays at a 3.79 yard per play clip on non-trips plays. Okay, pretty drastic if you ask me. Then let's go to Texas A&M. Okay, now here's the thing that you have to include with Texas A&M and why this is very interesting. 154 yards on 21 plays at a 7.3 yard per play clip. On non-trip plays, 275 yards on 52 plays at a 5.3 yard per play rate. Now, what's not included in this graphic on the screen, and if you're listening to this via podcast, I will explain it to you, even though you can't see the actual numbers on the screen. The 76-yard touchdown by Aaron Anderson in that game was not in trips. And the 40-yard reception by Caden Durham early in the game was not in trips. So the two most explosive plays that happened in this game weren't in trips. They were not in a 3x1. So even with that 140-yard, I say 140, that would be 115 yards on two plays. The trips plays still outweighed the non-trip plays by a full 2 yard per play margin. This is crazy. Absolutely crazy. And then we go to this one. This blew my freaking skull. Versus Ole Miss, when LSU lined up in 3x1s, 360 yards on 42 plays at an 8.6 yards per play clip. Now remember, this is Ole Miss. This is the best defense we played last year. On all other plays, 61 yards on 33 plays at a 1.8 yard per play clip. This has to be one of the most drastic differences I have ever seen in non-trips and all other formation types of splits, right? That is absolutely insane. A 7 yard difference per play just by adding one extra wide receiver or a running back. Sometimes it is a running back that goes into motion and adds to the wide receiver grouping out there. Tight end. 7 yards. 7 yards. That's how big of a difference it was. So, why is that the case? Why is that? Well, once again, we're going to get into all the extra mumbo-jumbo here. I've not done Alabama with this. I did quads with Alabama, but I said, look, let's just simplify it and look at trips. I didn't think the numbers would be that drastic. I really didn't. I haven't done USC. I want to do USC as well, but that was the first game of the season. I wanted to really look at the toughest defenses we played. Now, the reason why I didn't do Alabama, I ran out of time. But I also didn't want to do Alabama because that was such a negative game script and such a blowout that, you know, so much changes when you're just getting absolutely creamed. And I don't think that's going to happen versus Clemson. But it's insane. Absolutely insane. So if Joe Sloan were to reach out to me and say, look, what do you think, Carter? You look at this stuff every single day. Well, the first thing I would say, what's up, Joe Sloan? I'm cheering for you this year. But I would also say spread them out. Spread them out, especially now when you have your two tight ends that are truly better receivers than they are blockers. They are not traditional tight ends. So I want to see LSU spread teams out. Now, here's the extra context. When you are in trips, you're going to be throwing more than you're going to be running, and throws in general are going to have higher yard per play numbers than runs. So there's some of that mixed into this. Also, a lot of these plays were some third and longs mixed in there. But even then, it's even more impressive that just adding that extra receiver helps you convert a lot of third and longs. Now, I would also say in that Ole Miss clip, the best run we had versus Ole Miss was a Garrett Nussmeier scramble. And we also had a 10-yard run by Caden Durham in that game. Both of those out of trips. So what I found to be interesting was our run game did better out of trips. Caleb Jackson's best run on the season, the first run of the third quarter, a 3x1. So, look, I don't think it's just that simple. I really don't. But I do think we threw out of 2x2s too much. And I would need to go back and look at this. I'm mostly just focused on just the 3x1 plays. I haven't really fully, with the microscope, looked at what actually went wrong with our 2x2s. But a lot of the picks that we threw were out of 2x2s. Garrett Nussmeier's late interception versus Ole Miss, 2x2. Then the most egregious example of this was versus Ole Miss, one of the biggest plays we had in the game, Aaron Anderson on a deep post for 46 yards. And then in the red zone, we ran the ball for 0 yards. Then we had two near interceptions right after that, both of which were in 2x2s. So I do think Garrett prefers that because the thing that he is really good at is manipulating space. And to me, when you are in the 3x1, it stretches out that linebacker or whoever that nickel is, it just elongates the space that you have to cover. And I also think trips is even more valuable in college football with the hashes being as wide as they are. So whether you're running trips to the wide side or the short side, it stretches you out even further. Once again, I am no Brian Baldinger. I am no Lane Kiffin here. I have always said with our film study analysis that I am anything but the sharpest guy on the planet. I just give you my honest thoughts on what I see. And if I'm LSU, I'm stretching Clemson out. Pause. So we go to Samuel. Or actually, let's first go to Julie's Super Chat, dropping in a nice Venmo. Good to see you. How much do you think BK will be involved in offensive play calling? I have had private discussions with other media members and some at LSU about this, right? As far as we having Brian Kelly be involved in the play calling. I think you got to let Joe go and do his own thing, right? Look, I've said what I've said about Joe Sloan in the past. I wish him well. I like Joe Sloan personally. The people that I've spoken to for over decades now at LSU, when I would do the media scrum every day, the media members that have talked to Joe Sloan, I am a big North Louisiana guy. Joe Sloan is a big North Louisiana guy himself. The friends of Joe Sloan like him. I like him. Personally, I want him to succeed. But the thing that's very interesting is Joe Sloan is in the same spot, ironically, as a guy like Matt McMahon, what he's having to deal with at LSU, which is Joe Sloan is a coach in a conference where the coaching has never been better. And that is a case in baseball. The coaching in baseball has been so damn good. Everybody's got themselves a really good coach outside of Texas A&M. Then everyone in basketball's got a really good coach outside of us. We'll see if Matt McMahon, all I want him to do is make the tournament. But Matt McMahon probably would have been a top half coach if he was coaching at LSU 10 years ago. When you didn't have Rick Barnes and you didn't have freaking Bruce Pearl and Nate Oates. And now in college football, holy hell, Joe Sloan is an offensive play caller in a conference that has Bobby Petrino, freaking, to me, one of the most undertold offseason storylines is Ryan Grubb going to Alabama. I think it's wheels up for Alabama's offense this year. Then, I mean, you have Lane Kiffin. You have Josh Heupel with the extension. It's crazy how many good play callers there are in the SEC. So Joe Sloan, you know, I don't think anybody would have him in their top 10. But you don't need to be top 10 if you have Garrett Nussmeier at quarterback. And what I spent my entire day doing, I even lost track of time. That's why we started a few seconds late. I literally was just grinding through every single game, watching one final time every single one of these games. And today was the first day I actually jotted down the numbers of the trips versus non-trips. It's something that we've mentioned in other live streams, hand to the good book we have. But we have more so even mentioned it more on the Clemson side of things. So it's very, very, very interesting. Now, if you guys don't mind, please hit the like button, subscribe, all that good stuff. I am living my best life. I really am. It is game week. We're bringing in new partners here at PHL. It is an awesome, 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 awesome time. Now, as you guys can see, I am rocking the headset, and I'm doing it for a few different reasons. Number one, if you guys prefer the headset, let me know. I don't even know if it sounds that much better or worse. But part of it is because I am doing play-by-play in football yet again this year. I say yet again. It's been a while. It's been roughly a decade since I've done football play-by-play. I do a lot of basketball play-by-play, but I want to get used to being in a headset yet again because I have no preseason games. I'm going straight into it Friday night, and I wanted to put the headset on again so I can get used to having headphones and all of that on my head for a very long time. Let's go to Holden. He says, right, we had the speed to dominate the space in three wide receiver formations. Jeff in Denver, what's good, man? He's going to be in Clemson holding it up. Let's go. Holding up the book bands or the PHL bands. Some of you have the gold bands. I need to order more. Rodriguez says Ohio State comes in second in the wide receiver two debate. Are they second? They're definitely not first. The funny thing about the wide receiver two debate between LSU and Ohio State is most of the Ohio State wide receivers in the NFL are wide receiver twos, right? I don't think Garrett Wilson is a true one. I don't think JSN is a true alpha one. They're very good, but I would prefer them to be really good twos, where LSU's got four bona fide wide receiver ones in the NFL. Not only are they bona fide wide receiver ones, they are in the top end of those wide receiver ones. So, look, I give Ohio State a lot of credit. I would probably have them number two, but, you know, you can also say Alabama, especially with Jameson Williams breaking out last year. So, there you go. Let's keep it going with JT, a Clemson fan in the chat. He says, both Perkins and Weeks are really good linebackers. If y'all can keep them going this year, you should have a good year defensively. Well, maybe, just maybe, Harold Perkins has that season. Do I think he will have that year? I don't think game one is the best matchup for him, but I do think he will have a better season. Yes. Whit Weeks is indeed a very good linebacker. Now, we touched on this in the Patreon podcast where we dive even deeper into LSU football matchup data. And for me, one thing that really stands out about Harold Perkins is his tackling. It's got to be better. Last year, Harold Perkins was in the top 25 in all of college football when it comes to missed tackle data. All right? He's got to do better. He's got to be a better tackler. Let's see here. That's strange. Did my YouTube stream just cut off? Let me see. That is strange. But the truth is, another reason we started a little bit behind is that my software has been giving me issues. So let's go to a quick break, go to Labor Therapy a little bit early, and we'll be back right after this.
Are you missing that sweet swing? If pain is holding your golf game back, you must check out the full simulator at the Lafayette location of Laborde Therapy Center. Yes, Chase and his team built this simulator to go along with a full set of programs catered to your needs. Yes, this entire team at Laborde Therapy worked hard to fix that back, your elbow, shoulders, wrists, knees, toes, it doesn't matter. At their Lafayette location, 337-981-4053. Call today. But what if you don't golf? And what if you don't live in Lafayette? No problem. They fix anything therapy related. Book today, labortherapy.com, with locations in Cairncrow, Youngsville, Morgan City, and Crowley. Labortherapy.com. labordetherapy.com. Let's go.
All righty. We welcome in our friend, Mr. Chris Gordy, in the hizzy.
What's up, Carter? How are you, man?
Oh, my God. I decided to go full headset for the first time ever. Just because you're here. That's it.
Yeah, it's like we're in the booth at a stadium out there. You are looking live from Columbus, Ohio. It's Texas versus Ohio State.
Your favorite thing about college football week one is what?
It's funny, after doing Locked On SEC for, five, 6 years now, I love the optimism of everybody. Everybody, it's that everyone is 0-0. Everyone feels like they have a chance. Just about everybody thinks they're going to go, even if they think their coach is on the hot seat, they're talking themselves into, I think we can go 10-2, make the playoff. Like that's what the 12-team playoff has changed as well. BCS era used to be, all right, we got to run the table. Maybe we can lose a game. Then the 4-team playoff, it was like, all right, we can lose a game, but that's kind of it. Like, we got to run the table the rest of the way. The 12-team playoff is like, I don't even give a damn about winning the conference. Let's just go 10-2. Like, that's what's changed. And so way more teams feel like they have a chance. But week one, Carter, is always, you're undefeated. Everybody's undefeated. Everybody feels like we got a chance to win this thing.
Locked On SEC is where you can find them. LSU versus Clemson, what stands out to you the most?
Yeah, we had I work at the radio station in Houston. We had Chris Felica on this morning, and I love the Bear. He always gives a great perspective. And Felica said he's surprised how many people are not giving LSU a chance. Like,
right.
So many people just all in on, as if Clemson's never lost a home game, right? Like, we act like that is the toughest place to ever go play. LSU will play in tougher environments this season. Like, let's not get that twisted. So, Bryant-Denny Stadium, I'm sorry, is a much more hostile environment than Clemson. I think the biggest challenge for LSU is this week zero game. You have so many new pieces, man, through the transfer portal. And it's the big C word, chemistry. Sometimes it takes a little bit of time to develop that. And, right out of the gates, you get no margin of error. You've got to go out there and be clicking on all cylinders in a tough road environment like this. So, yeah, that's what's tough to me, man, is if any of these pieces are, first game jitters. Sorry, I jumped early. Whether it's Braylon Moore or Josh Thompson or whatever, like, new pieces next to me, you don't get a pass for that. So, this is why I look at other schools. A&M's playing a couple games before they have to go up to Notre Dame. Oklahoma gets, Illinois State this week before they get Michigan. Like, you wish LSU had some slappy this week before they have to go play at Clemson, but you don't. This is how the schedule sets up, and you got to go bring your A game. But diving into the numbers, Carter, I look at, Clemson was second worst in the ACC against the run last year. Like, that number just stands out to me. And the fact that LSU couldn't run the ball well last year, but Caden Durham still had his moments. I think LSU, all the talk about Nussmeier, I think if LSU is going to win this game, it's going to be because Caden Durham is running the football. And don't discount number 22. I think Harlan Berry is going to see some time, even if it's just on a screen pass or something, get the ball in his hands and let him get loose. The kid's got incredible speed, man. He's tiny. He's hard to bring down. Like, he could certainly play a factor this week. We'll see how Brian Kelly plays it. He had the safe card of Josh Williams the last couple of years because you knew what you were getting out of Josh. But I think now you've got that explosiveness of what Caden Durham could bring, what Harlan Berry could bring with the ball in their hands. We'll see what if Caleb Jackson's made any improvement. We were so excited about him 2 years ago, and then last year kind of, took a big step back. But if he could be that bowling ball in some short down yardage and keep the chains moving, man, that would be a big, big plus. I also think that they are going to – we're going to see a lot of movement, I think. I think we're going to see some end-arounds. You've got track speed with guys like Barry and Brown and, Jelani Watkins, Xavier Thomas. Like, it wouldn't shock me at all, Carter, if LSU gets the ball first down, snap, throw. Just don't even give that pass rush a chance to get to Nuss on a three-step, five-step drop, whatever it is. Get it and go. Throw, these wide receiver, these bubble screens, whatever you want to call them, like, get the ball in the hands of the playmaker. If Barry Brown falls forward for 3 yards, okay, it's like a first down run, you know? So I'll be curious to see how they do that, because I think the nightmare scenario, which you don't want for LSU, is having us drop back in these predictable downs and guys like Woods and all those, you know, all those big D linemen that that Clemson's got collapsing that pocket and coming down on us.
I apologize for whatever reason, and my phone is just blown up. This happened right before I went to break. I look at my YouTube stream, and it just ended. Like, it's never, ever, ever. Like, literally, I'm still live on all these other platforms where I'm not, like, you know, we discussed this earlier this week. I love YouTube the best. YouTube, you failed me. Google, you failed me. I love. Has that ever happened to you? Like, literally, it just ended.
Yeah, they were having some issues the last couple of days. So
really?
I don't know. Yeah.
YouTube.com?
Yep. Yep, certainly.
Wait, so you just dealt with something like this?
We were trying to look at their numbers, like our numbers yesterday, and there was a bunch of videos missing and all kinds of stuff. And then, I mean, even the Taylor Swift interview with Travis Kelce ended abruptly. I mean, then there were still 20 minutes to go on that podcast, and YouTube ended it.
So my apologies to that. We still are live on Facebook and Twitter and all the good stuff.
Cool.
You know, for me, Gordy, I look at this matchup where Brian Kelly just has so much more pressure than Dabo Sweeney. And not only does Brian Kelly, the coordinators have, to me, a lot more pressure for LSU. So I do wonder if that's in play here.
Yeah, I mean, the big thing with Joe Sloan is, okay, you got a year under your belt now. Like, how do you make adjustments? What other elements can you add to this playbook? And you get your quarterback back too. I mean, you know, Sloan's been around a while now. Like, he and Nuss, and when I talked with Nuss at the Manning Passing Academy, he mentioned Joe Sloan and having that familiarity and how much that's going to help. He knows what he likes to do. He knows what he doesn't like to do. I do think that we will see some more Nuss running this year. That was the big, you know, question towards the end of last year, even in the bowl game, you know, Texas Bowl, there was a few opportunities, run, and we saw him do it. So, you know, he's got to be able to recognize those moments where he rolls out, defense is going this way, and there's nothing but green grass in front of him. Dude, tuck it and go. Stop looking for the receiver. Like, just go. And I think we'll see some more of that. But yeah, I mean, there's no doubt. This is a big year for Joe Sloan to prove he can be an SEC a good SEC caliber OC. And if he does, he can make himself a lot of money. On the flip side, Blake Baker, man, show me you know how to stop a quarterback when he takes off and runs. I mean, that was the biggest problem with this defense last year, outside of some coverage busts and things like that. They just, I mean, you know, the Alabama game, the second half of the A&M game, you know, even moments, you know, they did a pretty good job against Pavia and Jackson Arnold in the last two games of the season, but Arnold still had something like, what, like 80 yards or something. So yeah. To me, Klubnik's not Michael Vick out there, but when he does tuck and run it, you want to be able to play your defense and contain him and not let him go off for a big chunk play. And so there's that. And then again, you know, can LSU create some pressure? That to me is, you know, where's the big sack artist? Is it Jack Pyburn? Is it Patrick Payton? You know, we know they brought in these big pieces. Okay, great. Like, you've done it elsewhere. Show me you can do it at LSU. Because some of the guys they brought in the last couple of years, Paris Shand and some of these other guys that have been in other schools, like, they were okay. But, like, where's my Tyson Jackson? Where's my, you know, Daniil Hunter? Where's my dude that is going to show up and just go off and be hitting double-digit sacks this year? Like, I need that. And then one more thing, Carter, the secondary. Like, get your hands on some footballs and get some freaking turnovers. Ashton Stamps, I'm talking to you. Jordan Gilbert.
Please.
Demarcus Cooley. Mansoor Delane. You know, A.J. Halsey is the guy who intercepted a bunch of balls at Houston last year. You know, Carter, they had 6 interceptions all of last year. I went back and was looking at some numbers that the 2007 opener, when they opened on the road at Mississippi State, LSU had 6 interceptions in that game alone. Craig Steltz had 3 interceptions himself in that game. Like, I want to see that. Get some damn turnovers. Why could you not last year get some interceptions, man? Like, that's, you know, LSU's hallmark for so many years was DBU show me there's still some semblance of DBU out there, because it ain't been there the last few years.
Let's go to Mr. Trent Medine, my guy. Do you see a world where if Sloan doesn't do well this year, they hire somebody else and keep him as a quarterback coach, or do they promote Atkins to offensive coordinator? I do think it's clear Joe Sloan's on the hot seat this year. So your thoughts on that, Gordy?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the realistic thing is if you're moving on from Sloan as the OC, he's not staying on staff. I think you're
right. Yeah.
You're parting ways. And so yeah, that's a real possibility that it doesn't work out and they go elsewhere. But you know, it's you're always looking for the next big thing, right? It's always who's the great OC, and then when you have a good one, they get poached, right? I mean, you know, look at Notre Dame's offense looked pretty damn good last year, right? So it's a tough time of having to when you have somebody who's a really good assistant, it's hard to keep them. Dave Aranda after 19, I mean, it's just hard to keep good OCs and DCs that are awesome. And then I think we judge those ones that aren't superior. We're looking at them sideways and going, bro, we're paying you a ton of money. You better be better. So, yeah, I was skeptical of the hire when they made it, because remember some of the names that were getting thrown out there. Like we were hearing, was it Lincoln Riley's brother? And, you know, all these different names that were getting thrown out there for creative play callers. And yeah, so Joe Sloan, I mean, look, I thought it was fine last year. I didn't think the offense was atrocious. Obviously the offensive line limits you. Look, I can be an incredible play caller, but if that line can't block, then you know I'm not going to be able to execute my offense and run the plays that I want to.
Auburn Baylor,
it's a big one for Hugh Freeze. I've had several people the last few days, Carter, tell me they think that Auburn wins and wins big.
Ooh,
that they big. They think that this Auburn team is on another level. Jackson Arnold with these weapons around him. Cam Coleman is one of the best receivers in the country. We'll see on Eric Singleton. I've heard he's questionable for the game, but
Ooh. Still
dudes all over. I think they'll maybe go running back by committee. They got Damari Alston, some other guys back there. But I've been told that the Auburn defense is what's going to be the difference maker. They just named Keldrick Falk a team captain today. The secondary I've heard is very good. And DJ Durkin, look, say what you want about DJ Durkin as a person. Everywhere he's been as a DC, he's been pretty damn good. I mean, his defenses are always pretty decent. So, last time we saw Baylor, Carter, I was at the Texas Bowl in Houston. And, you know, LSU got up big in that third quarter. And I felt like they kind of took the foot off the gas pedal, started taking some starters out. And then Sawyer Robertson, then he starts throwing for some garbage yards. You look at the box score, you go, damn, Baylor threw for 440 yards against LSU. Yeah, but watch the game. Like,
yeah.
It wasn't necessarily like he was just carving up LSU the entire game. So, yeah, I'm curious if Auburn can get their hands on some balls to get some turnovers, some short fields for the offense, I think Auburn's got a chance. Now, one thing to watch, it sounds like their kicker is – a little bit banged up, McPherson, and they may have to go Towns Magoo. They may have to lean on him. And so, if I'm Auburn, maybe I don't even settle for field goals. If I'm fourth and short, go for it. Like, just go balls out.
I am a little interested that this total is at 58.5. I don't know if I trust a Jackson Arnold quarterbacked offense to be in a shootout, but I've seen wilder things. So.
But here's the thing. You're judging Jackson based off of Oklahoma, where he had no wide receivers, no O-line, barely any tight ends, Bauer Sharp, withstanding, but they had nothing. They had no run game. They had nothing. He had nothing to work with last year at Oklahoma. Now he's got a bevy of talent around him at Auburn.
Tennessee, Syracuse. I think the Orange – play the Orange tough.
I was gonna say, are you picking the Orange?
Yeah, I think this game is a little clunky, but there's plenty of people I trust that are really accurate at picking these things. They like the Vols to roll, actually.
I've heard that too. I just think
okay.
I think danger though, right? I mean, maybe it's because I met Fran Brown earlier this year at the Lombardi Awards, and I love the guy. I mean, he's as He's as blue collar, tell you exactly what he's thinking kind of coach. And he comes from the SEC, right? Was an assistant under Kirby Smart at Georgia. Like, I think he's a future star in coaching. Look at what he did at Syracuse last year with all the all the limited talent he had. So in Joey Aguilar, we trust. Like, I give Josh Heupel credit because, look, just about every quarterback he's had, he's gotten the best out of. When Hendon Hooker came over from Virginia Tech, we weren't saying anything about the guy. We're like, he's just a dude. And then he made him into a Heisman contender. Joe Milton, look, the bar was high. Joe Milton, there was some good, some bad, but it wasn't a disaster. And they still had a nice season. What would they win, like 9 wins that year? And then last year, Nico Iamaliava, for all the hype and everything, he was coming along. I thought another year in the system with Heupel, he was going to take a big step forward this year. But with him gone, I look at Joey Aguilar. I watched some of his film at App State. It was way better early than it was later in his career there. But again, I got to give Heupel the benefit of the doubt and say he's going to get the most out of Aguilar. My problem, though, is how does he do in this game? You know, in such a big stage,
right,
with high expectations. Tennessee was just a playoff team. Like, they're not – this fan base is not going to give him a pass and be like, no, it's okay, bro. We'll lose 5 games this year. Like, they want him to perform. And so – it's a danger spot, man. I know most people are going to be watching Texas, Ohio State. Well, on my second TV, I'm going to have Syracuse, Tennessee, because the key to Tennessee, though, Carter, is the run game. If I asked you who led the SEC in rushing last year, would you say Tennessee? It was Tennessee. Like,
Dylan Sampson, dude, was so good. He was so damn good. He had a fumbling problem, but, I mean, he was so damn good.
Man. Every year that Josh Heupel's been there, they've been one of the best rushing teams in the SEC. So whether it's Deshaun Bishop, whatever, whoever the starter is, and maybe they go running back by committee, I think Tennessee, they have got to run the ball to take that pressure off of Aguilar. But, I mean, again, that line's sitting at about 2 touchdowns. I'd stay away from it, but it wouldn't shock me at all if Syracuse covered it. Maybe, you know, Tennessee wins 30-20, something like that, and get Syracuse covers.
I owe the Vols a lot. You know, they welcomed me, and I do film studies on them every week throughout the year. And they actually outnumbered my LSU film studies last year, dude. The Vol fans, as you can attest as well, Gordy, dude, they are second to none. And, you do not want to deal with Vol fans this weekend if Joey Aguilar lights it up. Dude, if he lights it up, if I'm Nico, I'm turning my DMs off. If Aguilar lights it up and UCLA sucks in week one.
Well, look at their schedule too, Carter. Like, it's very navigatable. I know they get Georgia in week 3, you get them at home, but your road trips are at Mississippi State, at Kentucky, and then your 2 tough ones are at Alabama and at Florida. All your home games, I mean, you play Arkansas, you get Oklahoma, you get Vanderbilt. Like, it's not crazy to think that they could go 10-2 with that schedule with a nice win this week. So it's doable. I am a little bit worried about the Boo Carter drama with trying to leave. And is he going to Colorado? And now he's staying. I saw his mom was back on social media again today. That's one of those things where Heupel's just got to go, dude, just keep your mouth shut, play good football. And if you want to leave at the end of the year, leave at the end of the year, but help us. We need you and you need us.
Yeah, I do have the Q's covering, but give me Tennessee to take care of business. I think Bama rolls Florida State.
Yeah, I mean, again, another one that we keep hearing, you know, Bama's down 3 starters now. I mean, Tim Keenan, who's supposed to be the big leader on the interior of the defensive line, we just found out today that he's going to miss some time. He's going to be out a couple weeks having surgery. And, you know, Jaden Roberts, I don't know if he was going to start on the O-line, but he was certainly still competing. He's going to be out. And then Jam Miller, you know, obviously was going to be the leading rushers out. And so you keep taking these pieces away. And, okay, we can say we believe in Ty Simpson and all this, but he's still got to go show it and not make any mistakes and not turn the ball over. So I get it. It's Ryan Williams. Put it up in his vicinity. Let him go get it. But we need to not talk about this Florida State team like it's the team that went 2-10 last year. Go look at that depth chart. It is completely different. Yeah, the offensive line is completely new. The receiving core is completely new. The quarterback is new in Castellanos. And, oh, by the way, their running back, Roydell Williams, who came from Alabama, you think he ain't going to want to stick it to his former team and run all over them? So I just keep looking at Bama and going, gosh, man, like any other year, Carter, any other year, this would be a preseason top 15 matchup. Like, we're talking Bama top 10. Florida State's usually a top 15, top 20 program. They're just coming off of one of their worst years they've ever had. But weren't they a double-digit win team just 2 years ago? Like, so I think Norvell's a still a good coach. I don't think he forgot how to coach. I just think he had a really atrocious assembly of talent last year. Well, they've cleaned house. It's a whole new program and a whole new roster. And so I say all that to say, I don't know what we're going to get. Like, Castellanos has been writing checks all offseason. We'll see if he can cash them. But
I'm dangerously high on Alabama this year, and it makes me so.
But why? Scared. But forget Nick Saban. Nick Saban is gone. He left the building. Why do you believe in Kalen DeBoer?
Because he's got Grubb back. I mean, if you were with Ryan Grubb for a decade plus,
does he have Michael Penix back? Because that was the guy that was helping run that offensive so efficiently.
Right, and then before that, he made Jake Haner look good. You know, I don't know. I might just be too sky high on Alabama, and that wide receiver trio being to me the best in the country. But
I'll tell you this though. I think Kalen DeBoer's a good coach. I just think some guys are not cut out for the SEC.
Interesting.
Brett Bielema was a good coach at Wisconsin. I mean, a really good coach. He comes to Arkansas, falls flat on his face. What's he been doing since he got to Illinois? He's winning Illinois. He's damn good coach again all of a sudden. Well, wait a minute. Why was Brett Bielema such a bad coach in Fayetteville, but such a good coach in Illinois? It's because some guys just aren't cut out for this league. I think Kalen DeBoer at Washington, great, man. You're awesome at Washington. At Alabama, though, in the SEC, look, he had two monster wins last year against Georgia and LSU. The Georgia win was, thank God, time expired because it felt like put another 5 minutes on the clock. Maybe Georgia comes back and wins that game. The LSU one was just, it was bad weather. Everything that could go Bama's way went Bama's way in that game, and they won. I give them credit for it. But you had two marquee wins completely canceled out by two marquee terrible losses. Yeah. Losing to Vanderbilt, losing to Oklahoma. The Vanderbilt one is one of the most atrocious losses in Alabama history. The Oklahoma loss is inexcusable with how bad their offense was. So to me, you lose credit for both those good wins because your two losses were so abysmal. And
interesting. I can't believe it that our guy Preston Guy goes viral for his Alabama take. And then I have you on here. I thought you were gonna be a fellow DeBoer believer. I'm not saying you're not a believer, but you're a big skeptic.
I'm not saying he's gonna, you know, lose six games this year. I think Bama's right. Gonna be fine, but like 9-3 is not what Bama wants. Like, they want playoffs are bust, and who knows, maybe with the new scheduling metric that 9-3 is good enough to get in the playoff. You know, it wasn't last year for Alabama, but I don't know, man. That's a tough schedule they got too. Like, there's some pitfalls there. Again, if they go on FSU, if they go into Tallahassee on Saturday and they're running wild and Daniel Hill and you know, all those backs filling in for Jam Miller do their thing and he's flinging it all over the field and they win 35-10, all right, cool. I'll tell you, Bama's definitely in 10-2 territory. I got to see it. There were times last year I was not impressed with Kane Womack's defense. Who's their best edge rusher? Where's Will Anderson Jr.? Where's Dallas Turner? Like, we got to see it from Alabama. I'm not giving them the benefit of the doubt. Forget, newsflash, Nick Saban is gone. Stop giving Bama the Saban benefit of the doubt. Saban got the benefit of the doubt. This Bama team don't get that.
Ooh, I can't believe it, dude. I can't freaking believe it. I never would have thunk I would be the Bama hype guy here. I do have him in my playoff. We then get to Ohio State, Texas. Your thoughts?
Alabama, Texas, or Alabama? I'm sorry, Ohio State, Texas.
That's Ohio State, Texas.
Yeah, sorry, I had Alabama on the brain.
But before you get to that, my God, Marler, set them straight. set them straight. Set these Bama.
9-3. I'm not saying they're going to be awful. I'm just saying I think I'm not a DeBoer believer.
Dude, I can't believe I'm the one defending Alabama. So you get into it with Preston Guy, Marler.
I didn't get into it with Preston. First off,
no, you're trying to put him in his place. You're trying to put him in his place.
He was wrong. It's, I mean, it's, I love Preston. He's got a corgi just like me. Great dude, does a phenomenal job at what he does. Like which is cover college football and LSU very well. I hope you understand I'm saying all that so I can set up the next part of what I'm about to say. Yeah, and that is, I love living in Louisiana. I think LSU is going to be great. I'm very excited about this year for them, all those things. It feels weird to me reading people that cheer for or cover a team that is 2-12 in their last 14 games against Alabama to be like, I don't believe in them. Buddy, it's taken two Heisman winners to beat Alabama. That's the only time they've beaten them in the last 14 times they've played them. I don't think Nuss could be great. I don't know if he's a Heisman. I just feel like looking at that and being like, yeah, that's a win. That's a dub. You know who's not a dub, though? Oklahoma, man. We got to go to Norman, and I understand it was tough for Bama last year. But listen, that's a 6-7 team last year. Yeah, that's going to be one of LSU's two losses. Personally,
I don't think a lot of LSU fans are saying, though, that Alabama – oh, we're not worried about that Bama game. Like,
oh, Preston was. Preston had hit LSU. No,
Preston, well, I did not – so, Gordy, do you know Preston Guy?
Yeah, yeah.
Great dude.
I did not think it, and I wasn't the one that actually cut the short, right? My editor did, and I was like, okay, yeah, let's roll. And I was with him. I was like, hey, cut something from the Bama thing. I didn't think he was going to edit it like that. And Preston was like, dude, I don't think Jalen Milroe is good. I don't think Ty Simpson is going to be any good. And
but can you understand how ridiculous that sounds? Like you can have the opinion that he's not good. Saying it on the heels of, yeah, LSU's going to go 10-2. I don't know. I don't think Jalen Milroe is all that good. Jalen Milroe is still running against LSU. Like, he's still, like, what are we, like, what are we talking about? Like, I thought it was disingenuous a little bit to look at it and say, and I know how this is going to be portrayed. I've done my best to, like, not be pigeonholed as like, anything related to my fandom, because I feel like, despite who I grew up in a household pulling for, I feel like I can be objective about it. And I thought LSU had a good chance of beating him for 2 years in a row. But, brother, I mean, they dog-walked LSU last year. I mean, they ran them out of the building, and then you look at that next year, and it's like, well, he only had 16 touchdowns, 11 receptions. Why are we putting up partial stats? Why are we putting up partial – like, you can say that Jalen Milroe wasn't a good thrower of the football. Fine. But I do know that the two fan bases I've heard about hating on that kid the most seem to be Georgia and LSU. And the last time I checked, against Georgia and LSU, he's 4-0. And that just feels odd to me to still have that I don't know, mentality or opinion when it's been so overly one-sided.
See, my questioning LSU is not Alabama and DeBoer has nothing to do with LSU. I mean, they're mutual exclusive. Like, it's whatever LSU does and Brian Kelly, he's going to be held to the fire whatever he does. But I just, again, I was told how great Kalen DeBoer, how great he was and all this, and I kept looking at his track record. I'm like, wait, it's a very small track record at the highest level of college football. Stop telling me about Sioux Falls. I don't care about what you did there. What'd you do at the big boy level?
You want to talk about the big boy level?
Oh, yeah. You tell me about his 1.5 or 2 years at Washington.
I'll tell you about the big boy level. I'll tell you he's 15-3 against top 25 opponents, which is the best record in the entire country. I'm not great at math, but that is what? 5 out of 6, 83.3% winning percentage. He's also
unranked teams, though. Like,
that's the issue that I think that really should be looked at. I said it to him at media days. I was like, because listen, 15-3 against ranked opponents. One of those losses to Michigan, Tennessee last year, and there's another one in there I'm missing. But like, what I will say for DeBoer in his favor is all the talk. Like, he's kind of lumped into this weird category, and maybe it's because of his hair. Maybe it's because of his Walmart shirts that he wears. I don't know. Or he just not.
Dude, I love the DeBoer fashion.
It's so bad.
Because I live in a small town. Everybody wears that gear.
They're also not being paid $10 million a year to coach the University of Alabama.
DeBoer showing relatable. Yeah. DeBoer's not about that rowback life.
No, he's not.
DeBoer is going to get some Kirkland stuff, baby.
I think that when you look at him, like, Gordy, you're not wrong, like, to be very clear. Like, I will defend him into the part of it's like, okay, if you're going to sit here and say, no, he's like so far behind Kirby, the ones that he's always ranked behind,
oh, no.
Kirby, Lanning. I'm not saying you are. I'm saying in general, Kirby, Lanning, Sark, whoever else. And then you look at his record, he's like 6-0 against those guys. Like, not he beat them once in a close game like Kirby. He's owned Sark. He's owned Lanning, who's like now become like this, like he is the next Kirby Smart, and he's 3-0 against him, beat him twice in the same season. So I look at that, and I'm like,
I'm not giving him credit for the Holiday Bowl. Like, come on. Texas had people not playing in that game. Listen, like, I don't give credit for Holiday Bowl.
Give him credit for the College Football Playoff game he beat him in. How about that?
That he had to hang on for the skin of, by the skin of his teeth.
Now we're going to start giving – we're taking points away because of fashion.
Now he's there.
No. I give Texas a lot of credit for coming back into that game, but Washington –
what does he have to do if he's not winning by enough in the college football playoff?
Let me settle this. He's a good coach. I don't think he's elite. And people are talking about him like he's elite. And they're like, Bama's back. They're going to roll. And I'm like, I think he's a 3-4 loss coach a year. Like, that's just who he is at Alabama.
It has not been well. Okay.
At Alabama, in the SEC.
Your argument against him is I don't want to hear about Sioux Falls. Give me like what he did in the big boy leagues. And it's like, okay, here's it in the big boy. No. I don't want to hear all of those things in the big boy leagues. I just want to do the Bama season.
When Joe Burrow was playing football, he still had not been a head coach at this level yet. So like that's how small sample size this is.
Right. And the small sample size, he made it to the national championship game 2 years ago. And also, again, he's played 18 games against ranked opponents, and he's won 15 of them. You're right that he needs to figure out ways to avoid the trap games. Like he's been very bad, not just as a like I did a whole deep dive on it that morning when you were taking the pictures of me from above and I was all hunched over with my tech neck and my scoliosis at media days. And it was like he's like whatever his record is against unranked opponents, he as a double digit favorite, he's been horrible against the spread and losing outright. Like he's been bad in those moments. So I think that's where you hold his feet to the fire. But who's elite beyond him? Like if you're saying that's not elite, I need to know what the parameters are and who else is in that group.
Well, I'm saying for the Bama standard, like the Bama fans, our expectation is playoff every year. I just don't think standard. He's going to do that. What's that?
They can't spell standard.
Oh my God. Look, I have Alabama in my college football playoff. I do think they're going to be fantastic this year. And my biggest call last year was Milroe falling off a cliff. And I said it before the season.
Oh my God.
And now Milroe is the worst pairing ever with what DeBoer wants to do offensively. And now he gets Ryan Grubb back. This is a guy he's coached with for 12 consecutive seasons.
No, but not at a real level, though.
Is Michael Penix back, too? Because that's who all that success is with.
Oh, my God.
And then Jake Haener,
There's no talent around him.
Jake Haener just got cut. From the NFL.
Let me ask this, Gordy, because it feels like we're moving the goalposts a lot here, which happens a lot when Alabama gets beat. So I get it. So I mean physically taking the goalposts out of the ground and then putting them in the Tennessee River as Tennessee's done.
Okay, I'll give you that, Marley. That was good.
Here's my thing.
I got to give you that, bro.
Yeah, the last 9 times they have lost on the road, they've only lost 9 games on the road dating back to 2013. The goalposts in the field, the goalposts have been torn down every time. Field's been rushed. Or maybe not the goalpost has been turned out, but the field's been rushed every time.
The field has been rushed. Yeah.
So here's my question for you. If you're saying, well, he's not good because Jake Haener just got cut from the Saints.
I'm joking on that. Okay. Just saying, right. I think as an SEC head coach, I don't think he is going to be this dominant big time coach. I just don't think he will.
Do you think he needs to win at least 10 games for your opinion of him to change?
Well, again, I would have said that a few weeks ago, that 10-2 was the bar. But, you know, now this strength of schedule thing that's entered the field of the playoff, I think a 9-3 Bama, I think, will make the playoff because they'll find a way to get them in because they're playing, what, 5 ranked teams on the backstretch of the schedule? So
they're playing 11 Power 5 teams. Listen, people love that narrative when they were like, Bama doesn't play anybody. And it was like, you just Google it. It's a simple Google. Like the last 10 years, they've played an average of 4, I think it's like 4.4 ranked opponents here in the regular season alone, and had 5 or more, so nearly half the schedule in front of you. They're the only team in the SEC that has gone out of their way to schedule 2 Power 4 opponents every year, including this year until 2034, for 10 straight years. That's going to go away now. They're going to 9 games. I thought it was pretty stupid because like they had to know that was coming down the pipe, at least to some degree. But here's the thing. If you're going to judge him and say, well, it's only because of Michael Penix or it's only because of this, how about we also say fair is fair? And maybe the 1 year that we're going to judge him off of in this entire collective, you know, coaching resume. Maybe we also bring up the fact that he lost 41 players to the portal last year. Maybe we bring up the fact that he had 12 total players in the secondary alone that were lost to the portal and or the NFL or into graduation going into last season. And then on top of all that, he comes in with a oil and water mix of his offensive style and Jalen Milroe. As much as I love Jalen Milroe when he was there, but like,
he could have picked a quarterback, though. The portal was open. He could have picked a different quarterback if he didn't think he fit his scheme.
To Marler's point, it was a later exit, was it not, for Nick? And it makes it harder for
him. Yeah, and also, when he left on January, whatever it was, that means they were the only team in the country, that had, at that time, the portal was open, but only to their players. I don't know if you've checked Alabama's roster lately. Treasure trove for a lot of – Caleb Downs is doing pretty well from what I've heard. A lot of other players – there's like three or four players off this roster that all signed the same year that are starting quarterbacks now around Division I. Eli Holstein, the kid from BC, like all those players. So you lose 41 players. And while that's also happening, Gordy, you're right. He could go get a quarterback. You know where he couldn't get a quarterback from? The SEC.
Right.
So they got to go pick from any other conference, which is a lesser conference, and then hope, yeah, you're going to come in here and compete with a guy who just took Alabama to the college football playoff. And see if you can. Why would he have done that?
I mean, that New Mexico State quarterback was pretty good. He transferred into the SEC, did pretty well.
Did he make a playoff game? I know he's 1-0 against Jalen Milroe in that one game, but did they make a playoff game? Because I heard we're really discounting making the college football playoff.
We can agree that loss cancels out any good win DeBoer had, right? You can't lose.
No. Auburn lost to Vanderbilt. Beat six teams last year. You're right. They should not have lost to Vanderbilt. You're right. Texas almost lost to Vanderbilt. Right,
I don't think almost is.
I'm using what Gordy has talked about.
They needed an offside kick or something, but
it was a pretty close game. They won by three.
Sure.
Yep, but no, that is what happened. And then they beat Auburn. They had some good wins on that schedule, right? They beat Virginia Tech. I mean, like I get what you're saying, but to sit here and say he's not a good coach, and then you'd be like, "Hey,
he's not a good coach." You're hearing what you want to hear. I'm saying he's a 9-win coach. That's just not. Again, for the Bama standard, they want 11, 12 wins a year. And I don't think he's going to bring that. But I think he's going to be fine. He's going to win some games he's supposed to. And
yeah, like Georgia, the number one team in the country, did that. That was pretty good. That was pretty fine.
But don't get mad if he goes
9-3. I think that this one fan base is being very, very, man, like, no, like the standard that we're holding this guy to versus other coaches feels very different. And to sit here and say, in this day and age, we've seen how difficult it is to make a college football playoff. To make a college football playoff, to have that record against ranked opponents, to have that. I brought up the thing about Texas, and you're like, I don't want to hear about a Holiday Bowl. They played in another bowl game the year after, and he beat him again. He beat Lanning three times in a row. Like, I don't know what else he has to do besides not have lost to Vanderbilt for the narrative to change. I think part of it is that people are ready to watch him lose.
Nick Saban raised the standard, and the standard is playoff every year. I'm sorry. That's what the Alabama fans expect. So if DeBoer's not doing that, then he's not achieving the standard at Alabama.
That's fair.
Okay. A few more.
No.
Does Texas beat Ohio State this weekend?
With divorce coaching, because he beat them both. Probably beat them both.
I think Texas, the defense, like, I mean, it's easy to say it's Ohio State at home. It's Arch's first big, real, true test. I stand by that backfield. I mean, Trey Wisner came out of nowhere last year, and now you get C.J. Baxter back with the other backs back there. I think that the offensive line is a big question for Texas, but everybody I've talked to in Austin says, dude, you're making more out of that than you need to. I'm like, all right, well, let me see it. Trevor Goosby and, you know, guys who have gotten some experience in playing. But to me, it's about the pre-snap penalty. Like, watch the false starts. Watch the holding. That's going to be big because that's what could be the difference maker. If – you know, they got a first and goal at the 5, and then it's a false start. Now it's a first and 10. Now you were going to run it. Now you got to throw it with Arch. You know what I mean? Like things like that that could really change the dynamic of this game. But I just keep going back to Texas' defense. All these dudes they got, they were so good last year. They did not allow you to score. You know, I think that defense is still going to be just as strong. So if they're doing that and they're getting after Julian Saye and they force him into some mistakes, it's advantage Texas. Texas wins, but they win ugly. I you know, like maybe it's a 17-13 type game, we go, oh, that was
a typical Big Ten.
Yeah.
There's a prime number involved for no reason at all.
All right, let's hear it, Marler. All right, are you on the horns as well?
I want to say a couple more things about Alabama and their tradition. And listen, dating back to – no, I'm kidding. I can't believe you would even hint that Texas would ever lose a game, ever. Because I'm not sure if you've talked to their media or anybody associated with that university, but they are God's gift to football. And I cannot I there's not a group of media that I've enjoyed less than Texas. And I don't – like, I make no hesitation or reservations in saying that. I will also tell you, yeah, man, it's like you and I talked about this last night, Gordy. We didn't even yell at each other that time, which was if Texas can score 14 points, you could make the case that I don't know if anyone beats them because their defense is so loaded. And here's the thing too, like there's a lot of question marks for Texas for sure. Ohio State's got a ton too. Like Ohio State lost a shit ton of talent to the NFL draft. Like they are replacing a quarterback. They're replacing a ton on that defense. Like Caleb Downs is back. They've got the best player in college football, Jeremiah Smith. But you've also got some situations there where you're like, what is like who do they think is going to all of a sudden just step in right away and be like, no, this we're an 11 a.m. kick is supposed to be so daunting. Like if it was at night, I would feel worse about it. If it was,
yeah.
But Arch does have some experience, and he has the best offensive play caller in the country. And I think he's going up again. It's mirrored stuff on the offense, minus Jeremiah Smith. The defense, I think Texas is way ahead of him.
The weirdest thing is no one's talking about Matt freaking Patricia calling plays. Like, what could go wrong? I mean, what yeah. Nothing.
I'm like Connor Stallions my way into there if I can put on 20 more pounds before tomorrow and just pretend I'm Matt Patricia. It's bizarre to me that he has been an offensive coordinator in the NFL in the last 4 years, and now he's the defensive coordinator at Ohio State, which is just – and now the guy who hired him to be the OC in the NFL is the head coach at North Carolina. What a bizarre time we're living in.
I met Patricia at the Super Bowl, and really nice guy. Yeah. But I did – dude, I
– Is there a chance he's not a good – I mean – this could be a bust.
Like, yeah, that's what I'm saying.
And he's not a good college DC.
Steve Sarkisian versus Matt Patricia is just insane to me.
It's like, advantage Sark all day, yeah.
I think Sark's the best play caller in the country right now. And you then have Brian Hartline, and obviously Ryan Day is going to help him out a lot with him switching over to actually calling plays. But I think Texas wins. We have some line movement going towards Texas now with the yeah, and I'm just in on Texas this year. I have Texas and Alabama as my SEC championship game, and I know it's chalky, but that's just how I see it right now.
Let me give you a name,
because I'm an objective member of the media that can, you know, I don't have to.
Let me give you a name to keep an eye on too, because I've had three different Texas people tell me this week a name to keep an eye on. We know how good Ryan Wingo is, right? Like he's the stud. He's the guy that was. He was the freshman last year working on the second unit with Arch Manning, developing that chemistry together. So I think Wingo is set for a big game. But Parker Livingstone, and that's with an E on the end. Not Livingstone for some reason. But number 13, redshirt freshman. I've had three different people in the past week tell me, watch for number 13. So Parker Livingstone, watch him this weekend. They said he is as speedy as hell, and he's going to get loose.
Lovejoy like High School. Let's go.
And Jack Hendrys too, the tight end. Somebody told me earlier this week, as good as Gunnar Helm was, they think Jack Hendrys has a chance to be even better.
That's pretty crazy. Because they did lose a ton of production. Everyone keeps talking about like how good Arch can be. He does have so many new faces around him. But I think what you said before all that, Gordy, it's the only good point you've made this entire offseason, not even today, just the entire offseason now that we're in a fight. The defense, man, I think the defense is like, it's odd to talk about that with the Steve Sarkisian offense, but like, do you think he's good enough to get three scores? Because I don't remember were there games last year where they didn't? I guess yes. Ohio State. They like last year because they were going in to score to tie it up and they had that fumble or strip sack. But I don't know. I think they're going to be good.
Are you buying a Southern Miss upset of Mississippi State or the trendy pick Toledo over Kentucky? Are y'all? Are we? Are we in on that, or what's that?
I'll tell you, I talked to a guy who's a diehard Southern Miss fan today, and he said he talked to his friends in Hattiesburg. He said that this is their Super Bowl. Like, they are going nutso for this. And I think he said years ago, Southern Miss has beaten Mississippi State twice, but he said both those games were in Starkville, that they've never played this game in Hattiesburg. So it's danger territory for Jeff Lebby, man. I get it. It's Mississippi State. They're supposed to finish bottom of the barrel in the SEC, but that could be a disastrous start to the year if they start losing to Southern Miss.
Dude, there is a – where's the Wikipedia on this? Because I looked this up a while ago, but I think I had been drinking. Should have outed myself. But it is like there was a time they okay. So Mississippi State has won the last several, but like this rivalry itself, or I guess like series history, is not crazy one sided because they used to play a whole bunch. And you look, I'm looking at it right now, 77-88. Southern Miss won 10 of those 12 games, so it's not been like some crazy one sided just because Mississippi State's the SEC team. I just can't get past what Toledo did to Mississippi State on their home turf a year ago. I think Southern Miss at least keeps it close, mainly because of what you said about how it's their Super Bowl.
1978 is the last time Southern Miss beat Mississippi State in Hattiesburg.
In Hattiesburg, yeah. They played them in the only time a whole bunch.
Yeah, that's the only time that they've ever beat them in Hattiesburg.
That's wild. You know what else is wild is they lost him in 90 when Brett Favre was there.
You know what else is wild? We're going to be watching Texas, Ohio State, and Syracuse, Tennessee. Nobody's going to be watching Southern Miss, Mississippi State. Wow. I'll have it on my fourth TV.
You got a fourth TV? Caleb Moore, yeah, man. Three, dude.
He's got every bobblehead known to mankind.
Yeah, what's going on back there?
Got a lot.
I miss when you had bourbon back there. Okay, never mind. It's, by the way, side note, you live in Louisiana, Carter. Is Buffalo Trace not like a scarcity here?
I don't live in Louisiana, though. I don't. Everyone thinks I'm in Baton Rouge. I'm not. But my whole family's there.
Carter, you live in Arkansas. Is
it's the same thing. Huh?
Is Buffalo Trace... You live in that giant golden trophy. Is Buffalo Trace not as, dude? I was at like, first off, it's wild living in Louisiana because you can just buy liquor anywhere. Like,
yeah,
anywhere. And anyway, there was like Buffalo Trace was like 10 or it was like $20. It was insane.
Dude, your whole Twitter is just you complimenting Louisiana. I
love it so much here, dude. I cannot begin to tell you, like, we don't need to get into a show about me. I mean, we do, but like not today. Cause I do that with Gordy anyway, when he tells me to not be long winded. I love this state so much. This is the best place we've ever lived. I love it here so much, man. It's been awesome.
Everyone's so nice. Better. And the food's better, the alcohol, the sex is better. Your sex gets better too.
I'm not going to comment on that, but I mean, that feels weird now. She watches your show. No, I'm kidding. But the whole place is like great. Like, it just, you can just take liquor to go from restaurants and be like, no. I have a paper thing over the straw.
Well, let me tell you this perspective, Marla. Being born and raised in New Orleans, to me, that was the norm. So right. It was weird when I moved to Baton Rouge and they were like, wait, you can't take that drink outside. I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? Of course I could take a drink outside. They're like, no, it's illegal here. I'm like, what kind of communist regime do we live in Baton Rouge?
Yeah, Atlanta, you can't do. I mean, Atlanta, you can smoke weed just freely, apparently walking down the street. But I love it here, man. It's been really great. Been really great.
Last one before we skedaddle here. Your biggest SEC takeaway, Marler, with the 9-game conference schedule is what?
The optics of it, I feel like they did bend the knee. Either way, I don't think it's a good move. I don't like it. When you have run a sport for this long, and I don't care about the last 2 years, when you have run a sport and dominated a sport for this long, going into 2023, you had, Gordy, help me out here, 13, you've won 13 of 17, you'd played in 16 of 17 national titles. You had five different – it wasn't like it was just Bama. You had five different teams win national championships, multiple coaches at LSU doing it. Like, when you have that level of dominance and then you have a fall-off where you lose in the semifinals to the eventual national champion in the final 2 minutes 2 years in a row, the outcry from everyone was so stupid. And it's like they gaslit the rest of the country into thinking like, oh, the SEC is falling off the face of the earth because NIL. And it's like, no, you let Indiana go play a – are we allowed to cuss on the show?
Yeah, go for it.
A fucking dog shit schedule, then get out of any sort of tough games. They didn't play it wasn't that they didn't play a team that was ranked until November. We saw Michigan do that the year before. They didn't play a ranked opponent until week 12 against when they played Penn State in 2023. It's that we saw Indiana get to the month of November and not even play a fucking team that was above 500 at the time. Like, how do you make it past Halloween and you haven't played a single fucking team with a winning record? That's almost impossible to do. And we let them in the playoff just so they can get their dicks kicked in by Notre Dame in the first round. It was so stupid, the entire thing. And now all of a sudden it's like, well, you know, because the SEC didn't play anybody. And it's like, strength, every single metric you show to these people, the goalpost moves, and it's like, well, those are all skewed. How many different things can I show you? You want to see ranked opponents? Do you want to see strength of schedule? Do you want to see opponents' winning percentage? Like, what do you want me to show you? And then it's, for whatever reason, I think people were so tired of watching the SEC win, they were like, no, nothing you're going to say isn't. Indiana, I use them specifically because they're the team that got in. People forget that the SEC did not get the benefit of the doubt. People like Nicole Albrecht, Ari Wasserman, who keep preaching this whole thing about, yeah, the SEC just gets the benefit of the doubt every single year. We're living in a world where that didn't happen in the last time they went to a playoff. Like, you rewarded SMU, no wins over ranked opponents, the 75th ranked strength of schedule in the country going into the playoff. Those two teams got at large bids. And it's just, it's mind-blowing to me that not only did that happen, but we let people tell us that, oh, it's because you didn't do enough. And you're like, this is so stupid. So now we're going to play a ninth game in this conference. And then you hide behind the idea of like, well, AD said that fans wanted to have better home games to go to because they're paying all this money for tickets. Price of tickets isn't going to go down. Like then schedule better non-conference games. Stop scheduling stuff in Atlanta or wherever else for neutral site stuff. But like the idea of the Big Ten and the Big 12 move to 9-game schedules in the last 10 years, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, I can't believe you guys aren't doing this. It's the definition of that stupid thing where it's like, Eric, what's his name? Shoot somebody. He goes, I can't believe they would do this to me. The Big Ten made themselves. They did the 9-game schedule themselves for their own monetary and financial gain. And then they were like, I can't believe the rest of the country isn't doing this. Shut the fuck up. Like, what? You did this to yourself, man. I will not get over it anytime soon.
Yeah, and I've gotten into so many arguments because I'm on the complete. I love the 9-game. I think they needed to do it.
And why?
Because if I am in a conference, I want schedule equity the best we possibly could do in our own conference. Now, the playoff just doesn't matter as much to me. I know that sounds crazy because the main goal for everyone is to go to the playoff, make the most money, win national championships.
Not in that order, by the way.
I will say, Marley, you're on one tonight, man.
I get fired up about this because it's like you. I get the schedule equity thing, but it's like,
well, it's not going to be schedule equity because of the three permanents.
Right.
Like if Bama's going to have to play Tennessee, Auburn, and LSU as their three permanents, and somebody else gets Vanderbilt, Kentucky, and Mississippi State, like that's not a schedule equity.
Look at what Texas got last year versus Oklahoma. Like there wasn't schedule equity in this conference. But that's
the point though. With the 9-game conference schedule, that's what it does, right? Because you're not dodging teams, right? It is a huge advantage for Texas A&M that they do not have to play Georgia as often as a school like Auburn had to play Georgia for so long, or whoever Georgia's permanent rival would be in an 8 or a 9-game conference schedule in an amalgamation of a 16-team conference. You're telling me now that every single SEC team will play every other SEC team at least once over a 2-year period?
Again, you brought up schedule equity. As a fan, sure, if you want to watch it and you don't care about your team winning a national championship, I get it. Like if you're just looking at it in, I want my team to do well, but I want my favorite team to win. When I look up and I see, hey, Texas got Kentucky, Vandy, Mississippi State, Florida at home. Who am I missing here, Gordy? They got Georgia at home.
We're talking about last year.
Last year. They had a road game against A&M.
Yeah, they avoided avoided LSU.
Ole Miss. Bama.
Yes. Mizzou. So one extra conference game adds one of those more difficult teams.
Right. And when Bama goes and plays Tennessee, LSU, and Auburn,
it could.
On top of Georgia, A&M, Ole Miss, whoever else, and then South Carolina gets Kentucky, Vandy, and Tennessee, that's not the same. Like, that's not schedule equity. That is one team who is we're looking at from a – well, their bar's already set lower. Teams like Mississippi State will never, ever – be in competition for an SEC championship or the playoff in the rest of their existence. And I'm not saying they've done that a ton now.
Well, they haven't done that, Marler.
In 2014, they were the number one team in the country. Yeah. They've also played in more SEC championships than Ole Miss, than Vandy, than I think maybe you could throw not Tennessee, but like South Carolina. I get what you're saying, but you're now making those teams even lower. Like,
Prescott would have had a chance with a 12-team playoff.
Yeah, 1,000%.
Oh, yeah.
But you there's no schedule equity. And move outside the conference, though. Move outside the conference, because the idea that there's no schedule equity inside of here isn't the issue. It's when I go, we're doing this because Texas Tech is playing fucking Arizona State and Colorado. And, like, those are actually bad examples. TCU, Baylor, and like, what other shit teams from the Big 12? And then the Big 10 sits here on this, like, very weird moral high horse of, like, no, man, we've been playing 9 games. We don't play FCS games in November like cowards. You play them in September. Cool. So it's warmer outside. What am I missing here? Because you closed the season with Northwestern and Purdue for brunch time kickoffs in front of 12,000 people. Sick, bro. We should definitely, you know what? Let me go schedule Texas so I can make up for you scheduling fucking Maryland or Northwestern or Purdue. That's so stupid.
Yeah, but would you agree that the SEC will be a better product with an extra conference game? Yes or no?
I want to watch my team win national championships.
And who's and an extra conference game does not prevent that, though, Marler.
Okay.
It doesn't. Because 40. The last team from the SEC that won a national championship was who?
Georgia.
And how many regular season conference P4 teams did they play that year?
9, 10. No. Oh, because Georgia Tech. Yeah, sure.
Yes.
So yeah, we can use that one.
That didn't prevent them.
And now in the most recent example, it's not going to help. Like Florida played 11. And again, my issue is not the fact that they're not going to play these games and like be able to play in a championship as much as it is. We've been told by all these different people, oh, well, you guys got to, like, we've been, Kurt Cignetti, but yeah, we did the SEC model of scheduling. And it's like, if we're going to talk about all this, it better be talked about in facts. If you want to just tell me, listen, we're doing this no matter what. Shut up. Take your medicine. We don't care. We're going to make more money off this because that's what it's all about. Fine. Then just don't piss on me and tell me it's raining by saying, like, no, we wanted to add more games for home games. It is great for fans. It's not going to be cheaper tickets or anything like that. Like, it's going to be a better product. You're right. To watch year round, there's going to be more exciting games. But doing it, and then sitting here and saying, like, on the current slate of what our current season they're coming off of, doing it and saying, yeah, this is going to help our chances to get into the playoff. When we just saw, and I know they're making changes to the criteria, but we just saw Indiana and even Michigan when they won get rewarded for doing nothing against no competition, and then tell the rest of the world, wow, we played 9 conference games. You know how many road games Michigan has played in the month of September since 2019.
How many?
1. September 30th of 2023 against 4-8 Nebraska. Like, they don't leave the state. Like, they have an ankle monitor on them. Like it's absurd to me. And we have this entire idea of, like, again, tell me that you want to make more money, fine. But do not sit here and tell me it's because you don't play enough competition and we're playing 9 games, so we're better than you guys. That part is so stupid to me because it's not real. It's not accurate.
His first edition of the SEC Power Rankings.
That's Hunt. That's not me. That is not me.
Oh, it's Hunt Palmer.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I've known Hunt for a while. Georgia, Texas, LSU, Alabama, A&M. So you make all the graphics here, 104.5. You're enjoying Baton Rouge.
Love it.
You are one of
my favorite. Sorry for yelling so much.
You're one of my favorite SEC personalities. I like it because I like people that push my opinions. I'll say this on my final thing. I agree with everything you're saying about the Big Ten, right? I do. I just don't worry as much about Team 3 and Team 4 getting into the playoff.
Okay.
And now I'm also greedy because I'm going to now every year get 8 more Marler graphics, SEC versus SEC graphics.
I tell you what, man, I don't think you're wrong. And I really do feel like, as much as I've been yelling and whining and all that kind of shit about it, like, I could see in 5 years now we're used to this, and I'm like, you know what? This has been great. It's more fun. But I've never liked the NFL. And people will watch the NFL and say, whatever season that was when the Patriots were 18-0 and the Giants were 9-7 coming out of the wild card, and they beat the Patriots.
Yeah.
I didn't like that. Like, I'm not a Patriot. I just didn't like – I hated that. Like, and one of the things – I'm older than you are, but, like, growing up in the 90s, it was like – one of the things, this sport is flawed and stupid and silly and all these different things. And it's so flawed, man. It's so flawed. But there's like, if you lose a game, usually it matters like a bunch, towards the end of the year. There's times when it hasn't, but like, it feels weird to me that we could look up. And even last year, I thought Ohio State was the best team in the country. I picked them going into the playoff to win the national championship, picked them in August as well. But when they lost to Michigan, had no reason losing to Michigan. They lost to Michigan at home, and it was like that game didn't matter. Like, I don't love that. I just don't like that yet.
You know, one thing. So I just got a text from Gordy. He just said, oh, Carter, my internet just went out.
Yeah, he deserved it. Kalen DeBoer probably cut it,
dude. But it's funny. So I want to once again apologize to everyone. Our YouTube stream. I'm not huge on Facebook or on Twitter. No. We have decent followings or whatever. Our YouTube stream just shut off. It just shut off. So I've lost a lot of money. And you know, Gordy was like, "Hey, we've had a few YouTube streams just shut off." And then YouTube was in the middle of the biggest thing of all time with Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce.
Yeah.
And the YouTube's having issues. Wi-Fi's having issues. It's wild. Y'all go follow him, Vern Funquist. You could see the corgi and all of it. And
sorry for yelling.
You and I haven't met yet, so I'm looking forward to that. We never met.
You told me that last week. I still don't believe it.
No. And
look outside your window right now.
Oh, dude, I wish it was you, because I'm the only LSU YouTuber that is believing Kalen DeBoer is going to make a run in the playoff this year. I will also say, It's strange now that you're in Baton Rouge and you're loving it as much as you are. Congratulations on the engagement.
Thanks, brother.
I think you went live with me the day before it actually went down.
Yeah, and it was an awful week leading up to it because we were moving.
Yeah.
And anybody that's watched or that's like been engaged or married or moved, I proposed on Thursday. We moved on Saturday, and I cannot stress enough how bad of an idea that is on that level, because it worked out so well. We are so happy here. Like, this is like the best we've ever been. I'm like, dude, I got an email today from my SID at the college I went to, Georgia College State University. They're gonna feature me as like the alumni of the month in September.
Let's go.
It's like everything. I feel so great here. I really, really just love being here. And I'm not trying to brag about that. I'm just saying, like, it just feels like such a fresh start. And I love being here. And anybody that knows my story knows, you know, there's like ups and downs like this with anything. And I just feel so happy here. So it's been great. But brother, I tell you what, packing during the week of trying to propose, and she's just talking shit the whole time. Like, I don't even know why we're going there. I don't have a ring on my finger. I told you I wasn't going to go if I didn't have a ring on my finger. And then like, bringing it up to her friends on the phone, like in this one bedroom apartment, like I can't hear. I'm like, I will fucking go in the other room and do it right now, because the ring is sitting in my jacket pocket. Like, it's been great.
Your storytelling is second to none. Y'all go Vern Funquist, and keep up the good work, brother.
Thanks, dude. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, buddy. Chris Marler. Check him out. LouisianaSports.net. Matt Moscona's creation. Yeah, one final thing before we skedaddle here. Yeah, we get into intense debates, and I will be in an intense debate with every single human being at the 8 versus 9 schedule. And that's fine. I know I am on an island from an SEC perspective regarding that. But I do think if I were to change going back to an 8-game conference schedule, if your whole logic surrounding something really centers around, well, they do this, we should do that, or their road isn't as tough as our road, that kind of goes against a lot of the things of who I am as a person, right? I try my best to not look at others or look at what their road looked like. How much easier was their road into getting to where they are now? I'm always of the belief if you're good enough, you'll find a way to make it work. So there you go. Now, we want to thank our friends at Labor Therapy once again. Check out Zion Imaging, xyanimaging.com, and we'll talk to you guys soon. It is Power Hour LSU. Boom. Tonight, we are doing lemon pepper chicken wings. Let's go. Let's go.